Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Hey, friends and family of Sex with Simmery. We are so grateful to have your listenership. We have the coolest fans in the world. It's pretty much the best. And we hope that the love is mutual. If you are interested in supporting the Sex with Simmery media, either the website, the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/sexwithsimmery and become a supporter. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a regular supporter and continue to bring independent media that provides the kind of information that you want to have out in the world. Over here at Sex with Simmery, we have been doing this stuff for years. As you've noticed, we've got over 200 episodes. The Sex with Simmery website has been up since 2008. We've been giving you the goods for absolutely no cost, and we will continue to do so as long as we can. So thank you so much for your listenership, and we do hope that you will check it out. Patreon.com/sexwithsimmery. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and we are going to have a very interesting conversation today. So sometimes we talk to folks about their professional experience. Sometimes we talk to folks about their personal experience. And today is going to be a little bit of a combination of both. I'm very excited to introduce our guest, Natalie. So you are here today to talk about a few different things, and we are going to discuss the process of sexuality during, through trauma. And you know a little bit about this from a personal perspective, a little bit from a professional perspective. So I'm just going to let you tell your story. You said that the last few years of your life have been specifically different for you and your sexuality. So just what is that about?
So I always considered myself to be somebody that had everything with sexuality figured out. When I was in high school, I was a friend that everybody would go to with their questions about anything related to sex and sexuality. And then I went and got my bachelor's degree, and I was in psychology, sociology. I was planning on being a counselor for victims of trauma. Started working with a sexual assault hotline as a hotline counselor, and worked with various different nonprofits while I was there, all dealing with sexuality, and decided to pursue a master's in human sexuality studies. So after I graduated, I like took a year off. Everything was great. And then I moved to the East Coast for grad school. And just a few months later, my grandfather passed away. And him and I were really, really close. And it kind of sent me into a tailspin. And it really hit me unexpectedly in the realm of my sexuality. And a lot of people don't really think like, oh, someone's grandfather dies, they no longer know how to function as a sexual being. But depression and mental illness in general just kind of wreaks havoc. So over the last 2 years, I've been experiencing a bunch of ups and downs with body image and how my body should function, and just dealing with being the person who should, well, how my brain tells me should have it figured out. But I don't anymore, and it's been absolutely crazy. And my boyfriend, him and I have been dating for several years now, and he has also dealt with a lot of it, and I don't have answers for him either. So it's kind of coming to terms with practicing what you preach about body image and not being too hard on yourself, because sex and sexuality, they're tough things, and it's hard.
So let's go back to a few years ago, right? You feel like you've got everything figured out, not only for yourself, but to the point where you can talk to other people very comfortably about it and help them through their stuff. What does that feel like for you at that time? What is that reality?
It was great. It was all the time. Like, I would have friends telling their friends to text me whenever they had questions, especially about like what stores they could get latex-free condoms. And unfortunately, I would get a lot of like people being like, is this normal? And they would send me pictures, and I'm like, please just go to your doctor. Like, I don't know that much, but it was really empowering, especially being a woman that people go to for that, since women aren't generally considered to be like out with their sexuality, and being able to talk about it freely. And like, I just really like that people acknowledged it and there was a lot of power behind it. So I was just, I felt unstoppable for like a really, really long time with that.
What does that translate into for your sex life?
It was pretty great. I don't know. It's not like I was doing anything incredibly out of the ordinary because like sex pretty much, most things are normal. Like the vast majority of things are normal. So it's not like anything was absolutely insane. But orgasming on the regular, didn't really have any sexuality related stress or anything like that because orgasms are absolutely great stress relievers in general. And they're really good for headaches too. But it was easy for me at that particular time when I feel like a lot of people around me were like struggling in college with that when they were trying to like have as many sexual partners as they possibly could and then battling with the whole entire like to be a slut or not to be a slut dichotomy that happens way too often in college. So I don't know, I felt really steadfast in myself. I was very, very much grounded.
Okay. So you mentioned how mental health plays into this. What, in your personal experience, are the connections between mental health and your sense of sexual self?
For me, they're very interconnected. And I feel like a lot of people feel that they're interconnected because a lot of people, they'll have a really, really rough day at work and they just want to go home and fuck somebody. Like, that's how they deal with their stress. And for a long time, that was how I dealt with it. And it was really nice and it worked really well. But it messes with your mind and your relationship with your body. So when you're going through a depressive episode or you just don't feel like yourself, you almost like feel like you're not actually existing in the body that you are living in. And at least for me, like I can't speak for everybody with this, but for me, I felt like I was kind of an imposter in my own body. So even though like I might be enjoying sex, it might not connect to the same level that it used to, or it might just like, you might not be able to feel anything in places that you really should. Like for a few weeks there, clitoral stimulation was nothing. Like, and that shit's usually insane. It usually is. So it was a really weird thing that really threw me for a loop. I didn't know how to combat it because I was just told people like, I was like, oh no, you just need to work through these things. And like, I had all of these different ways that, like just talking to friends about finding like one thing that they like about their body. It could be their hair. It could be their legs or their calves. Like maybe they have really strong legs or maybe they have really great hands or something. And like, working out from there, finding small little things to love about yourself and your body and your sexuality. And that had always helped me in the past, but it had stopped working.
So you speak about this with this sort of like meta awareness that you understand sort of the proximal cause and like what was happening. In the moment, was this clear? Did you know what was happening?
Yes. And I almost feel like that made me more frustrated. Just because I realize this about myself. I'm very bad at dealing with negative emotions surrounding something like my grandfather dying. Like I come from a very large family, so death is usually like no big deal. We have so many people in the family that there's multiple funerals a year just because there's hundreds of us, so statistically it's going to happen. But it just, this particular death just hit very close to home and I didn't know how to deal with it. So it became more frustrating because I knew what I needed to do. I needed to talk to people. I needed to reach out to my support group of like my support network of people. But I just kept kind of trudging on and I didn't tell nearly any of my friends for months that I wasn't feeling like I belonged in my body. Like my boyfriend knew, but he also didn't quite know how to approach it because he didn't want, every time he tried to, I would always kind of be like, no, I'm great. I'm fine. I'm beautiful. Like, just leave me alone. Like, so it was a weird paradox that I was stuck in of just like knowing what I needed to do, but not being able to bring myself to do it.
So you mentioned before the show started, we were talking a little bit about your relationship situation and that you're in a long-term committed relationship with a partner. So when something happens to one person's sexuality, it happens to the couple.
Yeah.
So what does that mean for your relationship? What did that mean for your partner?
It was very stressful for him. He's been absolutely wonderful about everything, though. And it really increased communication between us. So even though I wasn't willing to talk at first, he eventually did just like sit me down and he was like, hey, we're in this together. You need to let me know what's going on. And now it's all the time. Like anything that's going on, if I am feeling crappy at all at any particular day, he's like, what do you need from me? And that I think is a really important thing in relationships that I hadn't really considered before. At least in my own personal relationships in general, I always thought that I had really good communication, but that this particular thing really puts communication to the test. You have to be able to talk about uncomfortable things and being able to be like, hey, so like sex kind of sucks for me right now. Like that's hard to tell your partner and it's hard for your partner to hear, but if it's every day, if it's constantly, how are you feeling? Like, do you feel grounded? Do you feel up to anything? And being able to check in during sex too, which is also just like getting positive, enthusiastic consent throughout the whole entire thing to make sure that everybody's just like in a really good space throughout the whole entire thing really, really helps.
Has he said anything about like what this meant for him? Like, how does he feel about your relationship? How does this make him feel? You know, there's a lot of cultural stuff around masculinity and around all this kind of stuff and like what relationships are supposed to be like, blah, 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 blah.
Like I said, he does get frustrated with it every once in a while. And I have had to reassure him a few times, like, no, it's not you. And like, that's not just a line. I know that gets used a lot. But it's also, after having more discussions, it's really kind of opened him up to the idea that like, he is more than what his various appendages can do. And both of us are kind of new to this long-term relationship thing. So it's kind of testing the boundaries of where you put value in our relationship. And it's not all about sex. Sex is fantastic, but there's more to sex than just the actual act of intercourse. So we've been able to find other ways to share intimacy. And he's slowly over time, he was able to like not place that value specifically on his masculinity, because this is something that was happening by an outside force in our relationship that had, it was not his doing. So I forgot where that sentence was going.
That's fine. You had a previous experience talking to other people about trauma and sexuality and hearing the narratives of folks who were going through their own piece of it. How does having heard those narratives and been on the helping side of it affected your process?
My process of
dealing with your own trauma, yeah.
When I was working for the sexual assault hotline, it was, it was very overwhelming just because like you hear all of these stories, and even though you may not have personally experienced that particular trauma in that particular way, there's always something that you can identify in it. And I feel like it's helped me realize that like this is not a new problem that I'm experiencing. This is something that people deal with on a regular basis, and I'm not alone in it. And there are a bunch of people out there who deal with this type of thing. And like mental illness in general can really change how a person thinks about themselves. And you hear a lot of that in those particular trauma stories where people will think that either A, it's somehow their fault, or that there's something wrong with them for feeling the way that they feel or not feeling the way that they feel. And it's all about just processing it in your own way. And I think it's really helped me realize that there's not one way to work through this, and there's not one way to feel about it. It's everybody's different, but you're going to be able to find somebody out there who understands every single time.
So where are we on the timeline right now? Where are you currently? How do you feel in terms of this is a thing that happened, this is a thing I've been dealing with? Are you in the throes of it? Are you past it, working through it? What's up?
I am on the upswing, I believe. Over the past few months, I would say, I've been feeling a lot more within my own body. And the sex has started, I don't want to say the sex has been better, because the sex has been, objectively good the whole entire time. But, I feel a lot more enthusiastic about a lot of things, especially just regarding talking about sex in general, too. When I wasn't enjoying sex as much, it wasn't as fun to talk about. It was just kind of a reminder. But now it's an exciting thing. And I feel like I'm kind of back in that college, I just decided to start studying sexuality phase again, because I'm just I'm reading everything. I'm talking to everybody about everything. I'm correcting everybody on Twitter who uses the word vagina instead of vulva. I'm all over the place with it.
That is a significant thing, actually. As a side note, we should just specify, vagina is the internal part, vulva is the external part. There is a difference and it matters. And part of the reason that it matters is that it reduces a woman's entire sexual experience down to being a penetrative object if it's all a vagina. So in order to counterbalance that prevailing and historical viewpoint that women's sexuality is just being a receptacle, we want to be real accurate with our terminology. And so the more you know, Timmy steps in and then she steps back out. All right, so we're going to go past you, Natalie.
I really liked the use of the word receptacle right there.
Well, the word vagina itself, the origins of the word vagina, it's sheath. It's Latin for sheath, as in a thing you put a sword in. And that's inherently problematic because a vagina doesn't exist specifically for things to go into it. It's there all the time. It's just for instance, I have one right now. Nothing's in it. And I'm fine. I'm good. Sometimes there will be things in it. And that's also fine. But that's not the core of my being. And that's not the purpose of it. It's just part of me. Its purpose is to be part of me. And so that's a thing. And meanwhile, the word cunts actually is a very positive, strong, feminine power connotation. But it was stolen from us by people who wanted to use it to insult women. So you can feel however you feel about that word.
And
you
I
can,
love it.
Yeah, you can, if somebody feels insulted by the use of that term, I completely support you, especially if it's someone using it to be misogynistic. I support you. However, just saying, it was originally our word. So, okay.
Give it back.
Yeah, taking it back. Speaking of taking it back, we're taking it back to Natalie. So you're preparing to go into graduate school in sexuality. So this is a thing that I'm familiar with. That level of excitement, and that alone is enough to help a great deal. I'm very curious how you're feeling about this process right now. If it's just
It's fairly overwhelming, just because I haven't been in school for a few years, and I kind of felt like an imposter at first. When I first received my acceptance letter, I was like, oh my god, I'm about to be a sexuality educator that doesn't really enjoy sex. This doesn't make much sense. But while I'm on the upswing, it just keeps getting more and more exciting the closer that it is. And it's only a month away, and now I'm panicking because I'm a very control freak type of person, and I don't have like any notebooks, and I don't really need notebooks because computers are a thing now, but like I feel the need to have notebooks. But I'm taking so many things in that like sometimes I can't even keep track of all of the articles that I have open in tabs on my computer, and it feels like a new beginning right now, and it's the next step, but it feels like it's just fresh. Start over.
And you're going to get to watch a bunch of weird porn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Super excited about that.
That part's fun. We have also discussed how part of your process has been that you have an outlet through the art form of burlesque, something that you've been doing for a few years. What is your history with that?
So I did take a workshop while I was in college for extra credit for a random sexuality class. They were like, hey, do something that takes you out of your comfort zone with sexuality. So I took a workshop on a whim and ended up in a troupe out there. And it kind of just added to my whole like sexuality, everything is amazing attitude. And then I took 2 years off in preparation of getting ready for grad school. And burlesque is expensive. It's very expensive costuming wise. And then a few months ago, is my timeline wrong? Has it not been a few months?
You know your life.
Well, I feel like it's been a few months, but I feel like it's only been like a month and a half. So, I found the burlesque scene out here in Philly, and, immediately just like standing in a burlesque show, I was like, oh my God, I forgot what this is like. I forgot everything, and it just like kind of hit me like a brick wall. And I started kittening, and then I have gotten a few random like, hey, we need a performer last minute, and I get to throw some things together and go out on stage and have fun. And just the support of this community in general, just like a lot of people, like they don't necessarily know my life story and the problems that I've been experiencing, but I can mention it casually in conversation and they're like, oh, but you're feeling better, that's fantastic. Like, so it's been really, really good to like feel myself returning back into my body and being able to be like, oh right, this is sexy, like I can work this, and it's good, and people enjoy it. But even if they didn't enjoy it, I'd probably still be doing it in my living room anyway. So like,
so what does it mean for you? What does it feel like for you to perform, to have that facet of expression and that means of conveyance?
I feel like it's almost like a new discovered form of intimacy for me, because I'm able to have like a bunch of different personal connections at the same time. Especially with the style of burlesque that I do, I tend to make a lot of eye contact with people, and I have this moment with everybody in the room, but then it's like I have a moment with this person and I can move to that person, and it's a great way for me to kind of transition between like blatantly sexual acts and not as blatantly sexual, so I can like be sexy with all of these in all of these different ways that don't necessarily have to be explicitly sexual, and it's like a great transition tool going back into it for me. So I have the intimacy and I have all of the love and the support, and then I take that home with me afterwards, and I just like I feel full, and it really helps me just remember how I used to feel.
And then does that translate into anything for your relationship?
It definitely does translate into sex life afterwards, especially if my boyfriend went to the show, because he's just like usually waiting at home with his like pants off, and he's like, I've been waiting for this for the past 2 hours. Like, so it's been really nice, especially having the enthusiasm that my boyfriend has for it too. Just, it's really been able to bring us so much closer with everything. And like, he's the one who actually pushed me to get back into burlesque. We went to a show and he was like, all right, you used to do that. You should go up and join, do all of the volunteer things, do all of the audience participation. So, yeah.
That's fantastic. All right. So, In terms of, you've had this experience and you're on this upswing, so hopefully this is something we consider like working on in progress, but like largely overcome. Is that?
I would say that I have firm footing, and I'm not, I don't expect it to go back downhill. I will never say that it's not going to, because like
cyclical nature of mental health.
Yeah, it happens, but I have a support system now. And I feel like a little bit more self-awareness with what I am capable of and actually having to do the things that I have been encouraging other people to do, even though it's hard. Like I know how to do it now. So I'm able to pull myself up a little bit easier with the help of other people.
So if you were to look into your toolkit, what are some things that you have acquired through this process that you didn't already have before?
I would say that the biggest thing is that I learned not to be too hard on myself, because it's going to take time. And like, I've never really been a patient person. So, just the knowledge that like it will work. I shouldn't say work itself out. It will get better if I keep working at it. And it won't just be like, oh, I did a few breath exercises and some naked yoga. Like that's, it helps, but it's not going to be a quick fix. And communication in general, just communication with everybody, not just partners, but like family members, if you're feeling particularly down that day, friends who are able to help you out in other ways. Like there, you can be super intimate with your friends without being sexual if that's not your thing. Like, so just communication times 10, 20, 30,000, what, all around.
I think it's interesting to delve into the communication piece, because that is a phrase that we hear a lot about, communicate with your partner and whatever. But what does that mean in brass tacks terms? Like, what does it mean to communicate well?
I would say honesty and empathy, because you need to be able to be honest with your partner, but you also need to be able to take what they say back. Like, communication isn't just like, oh, I'm dumping all of my feelings on you and you get to deal with it. It's having a back and forth and being able to let the other person finish what they're saying so you actually fully understand them, and listening to understand, not just listening to respond. And it's usually not just one discussion that takes place. It's like over time, and it's constantly working on it and figuring out how you can have discussions constructively. Because like, you can talk to one person in incredibly harsh terms, but then another person, like, they're not going to like that. So you got to, it's kind of constant evolving of communication. You got to keep it so you actually get stuff done, not just like say things and then expect things to be fixed.
I think one of the things that's been helpful for me, learning about active listening techniques from a colleague of mine, Dave Schwartz from Orchard Counseling, he talks about the most egregious example. This is absolutely supposed to be hyperbolic. If someone's pointing a gun at your head, the answer to discussing that, if we're making our motivation to have an active listening conversation where we have that empathy and that honesty, is not to say like, I'm, you know, like, stop. I mean, in real life, obviously you would say, stop pointing that thing at me. But in an active listening situation, this is the most hyperbolic example. It'd be like, when that gun is pointed at me, when you point that gun in this direction, I feel threatened. I feel like I am in danger. And so it doesn't center the conversation on what the other person's doing. It centers it on your lived experience. And so the only statements I can make are about what I am experiencing, what I am perceiving, and then stating outright what is happening over here on my side. I can't know what your motivations are. And you might be thinking, I'm pointing this gun at you, but like, I know I won't do anything. Like, I know that it's fine. That's not what's in my heart. I would never do that. Doesn't matter, because my lived experience over here is just as relevant. And so when we have these conversations that are difficult and they are about a disconnect in viewpoints, all we can speak to is our own experience and our own feelings. So like, that's been really helpful for me hearing that from Dave about like how to engage in a conversation. So it's like, it's not, you did this to me. There was a thing that happened in between. It's not A leads to, A was the proximal event, C is my reaction, but something happened in the middle, which was like the context and my perception.
Well, and I think that that is part of the reason that the communication with people, once I did start communicating with them, came out, because it was, there was a big disconnect between like when I was like, okay, I don't feel sexy right now, and people would be like, but you are. I'm like, but I don't feel it. So it was a lot of going back and forth and kind of deciphering between like what is what I am perceiving and what reality is, and then you have to kind of you have to fight to understand from both perspectives.
What is like, that to be sexy? Is sexy something that is bestowed upon you as a judgment of other people, and then you have a thing, and then like you can't debate whether or not you have it? Like,
I am objectively sexy. Yeah, no. I feel like sexy is a state of being that I didn't feel like I was occupying. So it was. But again, like I was perceiving as not doing that, but then I had friends who are all incredibly loving and supportive. So they were all like, to them in their reality, I was occupying that state of being, because they know who I am as a person. So like they were able to see the me that is inside of me that was just hidden and not really active at that particular moment in time. So like what was true for them, I wasn't able to see at that particular moment in time.
I like that you say that they were speaking to a larger holistic sense of who you are, not just in the moment that you were in. And then there's also the piece that so much of us is projected from other people, like their perception of what other people perceive our lives to be like based on the schemas that they have. So if you are a conventionally attractive person and you're succeeding in these ways that they can see, the parts that are visible and their perception of what a person who is like that, what their lives must be like, ergo, your life is like this. Let me tell you about that. And so it doesn't take into account A, that sexiness can exist in all types of people.
Yeah.
You don't have to look a particular way. You don't have to be super aggressive about it. It can be something that you only pull out a little bit. Like, it can be whatever. Sexiness is unique to individuals. And that the thing that matters is not necessarily like whether or not you should consider yourself qualified to be sexy because you check enough boxes, but whether or not like internally my sense of self is like, this is a thing I want to do, and this is a part of me that I want to express. Yeah. It's actually like an authentic piece, not just like hot enough to land a modeling gig. Like, that's not what matters.
Yeah.
That's my read on it anyway.
Well, and I feel like that's pretty accurate too, because like when I feel like sexiness is the best way to be sexy is to believe that you're sexy. And you can be like, this is me, and this is where I feel most badass. Or maybe badass isn't what makes you sexy. Like, that it all depends on how you feel sexy. So like for me, it's like when I feel like when I'm being a badass and I'm kind of like stomping around on stage and I'm like, yeah, you're looking at me. Yeah, your center of attention is on me right now. And like, but then I can also feel incredibly sexy when I own all of my friends on some sort of intellectual plane that they think that they're right. And then I'm like, yeah, I'm a badass. So like it really changes depending on context and who it is. So
going forward, what are you looking to accomplish? Might not even be the word. What are you hoping for, both personally and with your entering into your next phase professionally in this?
On a personal level right now, it would be, I'd say mind-blowing orgasms, again, would be a good place to strive for on a personal level. But professionally, after my master's, I've played with the idea of getting a PhD, but that one, you know, a lot could change in a few years. But I do really want to work with communities, specifically of women and femme-identifying people, to kind of own, I don't want to say own your sexy because that sounds kitschy and weird, but like on being able to embody your best self. And like that means a lot of different things for a lot of different women. And I kind of, I would like to even work with like just young girls on body image and boundary setting and all of these things that kind of give you the tools to be able to combat things later in your life when like life happens, because it's hard to feel sexy and to be a sexual being all the time. And I feel like a lot of women don't necessarily get the tools that they're expected to have when once they reach adulthood.
Do you think you're gonna still want to work with survivors of trauma?
I think that will definitely be part of it. I don't think that necessarily exclusively. Just because, especially with this particular experience over the last 2 years, I feel like I will have a hard time being objective in that particular facet. But I think that working with victims of trauma, it will be, it would definitely, they would be able to benefit greatly, especially if you get communities of people together who are able to actually discuss these things on not even just amongst themselves, but like in a wider group setting. So people who haven't experienced it also, like, they, people know, like, things happen. It could happen to you in the future. And like, trauma is different for everybody as well. So like, it might not necessarily be rape or sexual assault or any other sort of physical assault or a death in the family, or like, trauma happens in all different shades and hues and just all around. Being able to have a group of people draw from each other's experiences in general to create a breadth of tools for people to use, or just understanding if it happens to your friend, like, you need to be able to have people be able to talk about these things in constructive ways.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on and being willing to speak openly about this personal experience from,
thank you so much,
from this dynamic perspective. So yeah, thanks for doing this, and thank you everyone for listening, and have a fantastic day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timory. Sex with Timory, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimory.com, Sex with Timory on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timory_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.